Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. In today's episode, we speak with Ian Major from Jolt. Jolt is a technology startup focused on Bitcoin payments and infrastructure. Ian shares with us his journey into Bitcoin, what they are working on, their thesis, as well as the recent launch in Brazil of the first of its kind stablecoin using Bitcoin's Lightning Network. We hope you enjoy, and as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz and joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow. Today, we welcome back Ian Major from Jolt. First of all, welcome back. Happy to have you here.
Guys, pleasure to be back. I'm thrilled to do round two today and get into a little more detail on things. So appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, and Ian's first appearance with us was actually an abbreviated appearance, and it was part of the kind of the wrap up from the winners of the pitch day competition at Bitcoin Conference 2024. And so we really just did, it was a series with the three winners, and we just did kind of a high level overview. But since that time, Jolt has had some exciting news and you've had more developments, and we're really excited about what you're building with Jolt. So we wanted to have you back to talk a little bit more in detail about what Jolt's, the problems that Jolt's is solving, the technology you're working with, and your new announcements. So, Ian, just excited to have you back. But I don't even think in our first episode that we really went too deep into your origin story about how you became connected to Bitcoin, and also how you and the CEO of Jolt, Stephen Dodge, your partner in this and co-founder, how you two kind of came together to found Jolt. So can you start us off with a little bit about your background and your origin story with Bitcoin?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I remember my senior year in university, I think it was 2013. So you had the 2013 cycle at the time. I had a classmate of mine in my econometrics class come in sweating every day. I was like, you know, what's going on? He was day trading Bitcoin. So my first exposure to it, unfortunately, was this kind of gambling thing on the internet. I was like, okay, you know, so it sort of put that aside. That was my first pass. I think like many of us, you know, rarely do we sort of get it on that first pass. Fast forward to 2017, I think that was about the time that I kind of realized, okay, you know, this is interesting. Although at the time it was still, okay, Bitcoin amongst a sea of other crypto assets, right? And I think shortly following that cycle, probably 2018, 19, did I really go down the rabbit hole and come to appreciate Bitcoin has some of these traits that really are difficult to replicate and I don't think have been replicated. And for many reasons, we can probably make a good argument as to why they will not be replicated. So Bitcoin is really special as this foundation to build on, of course, as this money in and of itself. And I think around probably 2019, 2020, at the time, I was actually over in Dubai. I worked for a number of years as a consultant at a company called Applied Predictive Technologies, which is a mouthful. But that company was acquired by MasterCard, interestingly enough, who's made a big push into data and analytics to complement their core payments business. And so I was living in Dubai for 2 years, working in the Middle East and Africa region. And while my personal role was a little more focused on some of the kind of complementary analytics, I saw a lot around the traditional world of payments, and it just became sort of eye-opening to me. I mean, don't get me wrong, like MasterCard, I think has added value for a lot of businesses, a lot of people, when you think about just the connectivity that money provides and being able to facilitate economic transactions. At the same time, as I'm hearing them say and talk about this mission of banking the unbanked, right, bringing people into the payment system, what I saw on the ground there was completely at odds with that, right? You had all this sort of bureaucratic structure organizationally, both on, you know, the MasterCard side of things, as well as on the issuing bank side of things. And the idea of being able to deliver a cost-effective payment solution for everyone, that was like a really, really eye-opening experience for me. And then connecting that back to Bitcoin, which is this truly global, borderless, anyone with any device can onboard to this payments network. It was like, this is much more than a 10x improvement. This is a 100x improvement. And so that was really the time that I started thinking of Bitcoin more broadly than just a store of value, but really as this settlement network for medium of exchange, which, you know, we'll get into a lot more. So that was kind of my path and realization. And a lot of those experiences, of course, helped inform Jolt. Steve and I are, we kind of share the CEO hat right now. He's kind of product operations. I'm business development. We have our CTO, Lyndon Stark. But Steve and I have been friends for 20 plus years now. So, you know, childhood friend, both, you know, went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole about the same time. And I think both had that entrepreneurial bug and ultimately came to the realization that there's just nothing else we feel that we can justify spending all our time and attention on than Bitcoin. And the rest is history.
So when did Jolts get started officially, Ian? I mean, how far into this are you?
Yeah, so we got started first half of 2023. And interestingly enough, at the time, we were actually focused on Bitcoin rewards, sort of Bitcoin rewards as a service, and enabling businesses to bring Bitcoin into their operations for rewarding customers for making purchases or signing up for a newsletter or making a referral, any sort of action you may want to incentivize. And we still have a lot of that tooling that's being used by, you know, awesome Bitcoin companies. Even Blockstream is using that technology for their e-commerce store. But I think what we realized was we were facing a lot of challenges in trying to cross this chasm into non-Bitcoin land, right? You know, and we were talking to mainstream businesses and the feedback was, hey, okay, this Bitcoin thing, it's cool, it's interesting. I get how it could maybe help me acquire a new customer segment, and those customers seem to be really motivated about earning this Bitcoin thing as a loyalty reward. But what about my current customer base, right? Is this relevant for them? And so, long story short, we get into the story if it's interesting. We ultimately realize that we need more stepping stones, right? Like, we're not there yet in terms of being able to roll such a program out in a traditional business. And so that's where we kind of started going down this tapered assets rabbit hole, which we can define and get into, and ultimately landed us in our current focus, which is really squarely on the tooling and infrastructure needed to support assets like stablecoins on the Bitcoin Lightning Network. So there's a lot we can unpack there, but that was sort of first half 2023. And then really 2024 has been the launch of this new strategy and really building out those different pieces of technology.
I have to congratulate you because sometimes founders, when they start with an idea, they're very married to that idea and they keep trying to make it fit. And I think you're listening to your clients and hearing what they're telling you, you know, helped you understand that there are other opportunities that perhaps would be easier to take advantage of quicker. And would love to hear. I mean, I think I've you know, you talked about or I've heard you talk in other podcasts and about being in different accelerator programs or your journey for kind of evolving the business. Can you talk about what that process was of you and Steve and identifying that rewards may be early in the Bitcoin adoption cycle and that this presented a better opportunity and specifically Taproot Assets, which is a new technology in the Bitcoin protocol stack, maybe describe, you know, exactly what that is and how you're using it.
Yeah, definitely. I think the realization was both active and passive in a way. One of our non-Bitcoin customers is a company called Kilo Club. They're actually a fitness center of all things, you know, really high-end fitness center. And the owner is a Bitcoiner. And however, you know, he was the first one to sort of say, hey, look, I would love to roll this out, but I know that my customers are not yet ready to make this big leap. And so can we have some sort of interim stepping stone, maybe a more kind of tokenized, you know, loyalty point that is perhaps backed by Bitcoin? So it still is going to retain its value in a way in which a traditional loyalty point is not, but it comes in this more familiar looking vessel that is just a lot more accessible to his average customer base. So that was like the initial spark and thing we heard that was kind of, aha, okay, you know, so definitely listening to, you know, to our customers. But then part of it was also, okay, we started building technology that could support that type of use case. And ultimately we landed on Taproot Assets as our sort of weapon of choice for enabling these types of assets on Bitcoin. For those not familiar, Taproot Assets is a protocol that was developed by Lightning Labs, who is behind LND, which is by far the biggest implementation of the Lightning Network. So folks will probably be familiar with the Bitcoin Lightning Network, this sort of L2 that sits on top of Bitcoin and enables, you know, instantly settled, super low cost payments. And so Lightning Labs announced this in 2022. So this has been multiple years in the making. But the whole purpose of Taproot Assets as a protocol is to make Bitcoin and the Lightning Network a multi-asset network, meaning you can have different assets like stablecoins that, you know, you can create, lift into a Lightning channel and move along the Lightning Network rails, just as you would, you know, move sats and Bitcoin. And we can get into why we think like that stablecoin use case is so important. But that is what Taproot Assets is in a nutshell. And, you know, picking that as our sort of weapon of choice and starting to build technology and getting into the community, we started getting like leads being sent to us from Lightning Labs. So companies that were coming to Lightning Labs saying, hey, this Taproot Assets thing seems really interesting. Like, how do we think about integrating it, supporting it, adding it to our own applications? And some of the tech that we were building, you know, would be really suitable for that. So it was a little bit of a very iterative process. Definitely a lot of research into the stablecoin market. I think folks would be totally mind blown at just how much real traction there actually is in stablecoin payment volumes. And all of that in collection sort of gave us the evidence to say, okay, like this is a much bigger and much more immediate opportunity for us as a company.
Yeah. I don't have the most recent numbers, but I heard that in first quarter of 2024, that stablecoin transactions actually exceeded Visa transactions for the first time by not an insignificant amount. So there is a lot of volume. And Ian, maybe just take a step back. We talked about Jolts doing rewards, and what is Jolts providing today?
Yeah. Yeah. So what we're providing is really, first and foremost, a software development kit or SDK that makes it really easy for developers and other businesses to bring support for these different protocols to their application. So, you know, within this software development kit, you get support for on-chain Bitcoin, you get support for Lightning. So that particular piece is quite similar to if folks listening are familiar with Breeze. Breeze has a well-known Lightning SDK. So that's somewhat similar to the Jolts SDK. But then the really unique piece that you get with Jolts is this Taproot Assets support and the ability to you know, issue assets like stablecoins on Bitcoin, as well as the kind of like payments orchestration. You'll see that term coming up a lot now with a lot of these kind of stablecoin as a service platforms, some of which have made huge headlines recently. Payments giant Stripe just acquired a company called Bridge for $1.1 billion. This is the biggest acquisition of any Bitcoin or crypto company. And so we basically provide the software, the SDK, the APIs that make it easy for any developer to add a fully functioning wallet that supports this whole Bitcoin stack, right? That enables asset issuers to come and manage and mint and create their assets. So it's the sort of full suite of tooling that someone would need to fully bring instant, you know, low-cost, multi-asset, Bitcoin-settled payments to their applications.
Filled with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River. River is a Bitcoin-only financial services company, which I have personally been using for years, and I'm a big fan of the product and company.
Yeah, I'm also a big fan, too. And I'm a big fan, especially when it comes to referring my friend group to start their Bitcoin journey or acquire some Bitcoin, because in addition to being a Bitcoin-only financial services company, River also has personalized customer service. So a person can actually talk to a human being if they need to when they're getting their account set up or in the process of it. I also love the fact that they have no fees on recurring purchases. And they also recently instituted a proof of reserve. So if you choose to hold your Bitcoin at River instead of self-custody, which many people do choose that, you can verify on their site that they have 100% reserved Bitcoin for every Bitcoin that you hold.
River also just launched a very interesting feature, which is a 3.8% yield paid out in Bitcoin on your US dollar cash that you deposit at River. So you can hold that US dollar cash, earn that 3.8% yield in Bitcoin in your account in River. And important to note, this is all through a regulated banking partner of theirs at a FDIC insured institution. So I think the River is a great partner for Bitcoin and cash deposited.
Yeah, because as much as we'd love to live on a Bitcoin standard, at least you and I, we need cash to operate in the world. And so this allows you to be able to earn a very competitive yield on your excess cash and have it paid in Bitcoin if you choose, and just continue to build your Bitcoin stash. So for anyone looking to start their journey, we invite you to join us at River by visiting partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin.
Yeah, and you know, let's highlight this new vertical that you know you're speaking to, Ian, as far as what Jolts provides and does infrastructure wise, because it's quite a massive, you know, added vertical that you kind of plugged into what you guys are doing there, and you're about to roll out the first use case of this, to my understanding, for Jolts with a partner in Brazil. So can you walk us through this particular example? What you guys are doing with this company in Brazil that's going to be issuing a stable coin, to my understanding, the first time on Bitcoin's Lightning Network, right? Can you give us an idea of what's going on behind the scenes there?
Yeah, great question, because I think that'll help bring a lot of this to life. So yeah, we were really excited. I was down in Sao Paulo, Brazil, a couple weeks ago at the SatsConf conference, which is a great Bitcoin conference, by the way, if anyone, you know, for the future. And we were co-announcing with our partner there, Yulin, who is the issuer behind Brazilian stablecoin DPIX. And so the PIX system in Brazil is kind of like the instant payment system, fiat, you know, payment system. And since the pandemic, it's really taken off in its popularity. You know, people, you can basically send PIX. So this would be like sending dollars to, you know, kind of similar to Zelle for those that are in the, you know, that are in the U.S. And so DPIX, decentralized PIX, is essentially a stablecoin backed by Brazilian reais. So one, you know, one-to-one backed, not dissimilar to how something like Tether is, you know, one-to-one backed with dollars. And this stablecoin, as you rightly said, is, we can officially say, is the first natively issued stablecoin on the Bitcoin Lightning Network as a Taproot asset. So the announcement we made a couple weeks ago was basically the issuing of that asset on mainnet. So very exciting. And then what we are rolling out right now as we speak is the actual kind of tech that enables individuals in that market to use all of this. So it's sort of multi, you know, think of the kind of multiple levels here. So you have the issuer level. So they're able to use our SDK for issuing the asset, managing supply as appropriate, as they get new reserves that come in, right? So that's them. Then there's another layer that we might call like the business layer, where these P2P operators, as they're called, or other types of businesses can also use our technology, whether that's the wallet, whether that's a swapping feature to convert DPIX into Bitcoin or vice versa. And then finally, you have like the end user at the bottom that would be able to, for example, hold DPIX or use it to buy Bitcoin. In fact, that really is the big use case that we're seeing so far, is people being able to buy Bitcoin peer-to-peer using DPIX as that familiar local unit of account. So we sort of, in that Jolts repertoire, kind of have technology that addresses each of those levels. But that's the idea. So individuals in Brazil can come and, you know, buy Bitcoin P2P using DPIX. Obviously, DPIX itself could be used, you know, for as payment for goods and services. So it's going to be really exciting to see this kind of continue to grow. And Yulin themselves only launched this asset earlier this year, and it's really, really taken off. So there is very strong demand in Brazil for something that I think offers a really important alternative to like the CBDCs or, you know, central bank digital currencies that are quite far along in the Brazilian market as well.
And the PIX system in Brazil, I've been tracking that for a little while as I've been involved with fintech in LATAM, and it's wildly successful. I mean, yeah. It had, and you know, you pointed out it really took off during COVID, but I mean, we really don't have anything in the U.S. that's similar to that in terms of being able to use your native fiat currency 24/7 on immediate settlement basis and transfer it. We still have a little bit more of a clunky system, I think, in the U.S., which is interesting. But just an aside question, I mean, for our Bitcoiners in the audience who might be panicking about now, about if we have more assets trading on the Bitcoin. We just had Bob Burnett, our last guest, on talking about block space scarcity. So how does this impact? If we have more and more transactions, occurring, how does Taproot assets and Lightning fit or alleviate the congestion in block space, especially if we look at tremendous more volume in countries around the world adopting stablecoins on Bitcoin?
Yeah, great. Great question, and very topical, as we've seen the last year plus unfold with different meta protocols like Ordinals and Runes and the whole kind of debate within the community. The really great news about Taproot Assets is it's an extremely chain efficient protocol, meaning that the data that ultimately gets written on chain is a very, very, very small footprint. So think of it like a giant tree structure that gives us the information about what assets exist, who owns what asset, you know, the history and sort of provenance of those different assets, transfers, all this sort of stuff. All of that is data that is stored off chain. And we can elegantly and cryptographically wrap it up and hash that onto the Bitcoin chain so that we're representing all this complex information in a really, really, really chain efficient way. So that's like the good news. I fully expect to see a ton of, additional activity driven by Taproot assets. If you look at, stablecoin payment volumes, they're at least three orders of magnitude bigger and more than, Lightning payment volumes as we see it today. Now, it is still worth noting that Taproot assets, how they work is when you mint an asset, that does still require an on-chain transaction. But then you can lift that asset into a Taproot asset channel or a Lightning channel, at which point you can now freely move that around the Lightning network. And so there is still going to be, and there's actually a lot of healthy debate in the community now with different things like Arc coming out that sort of recognize that, hey, even Lightning itself still has this sort of tether to the base chain when it comes to opening channels, closing channels. Those require on-chain transactions. But that is not specific to Taproot assets. And so Taproot assets, and that's part of why we selected this as our kind of tool of choice in doing this, was because it gives us the functionality. It's native to the Lightning network, which also cannot be said about these other meta protocols. And it's also very, chain efficient. So Bob won't come chasing after me or us.
Thanks for helping explain that component, Ian, because sometimes it does get a bit confusing understanding what's actually happening on chain and what's happening on the layer two as far as the transaction activity and everything you're speaking to helps kind of visualize that a little more. First of all, it's very smart, I think, also the role you guys are taking with this stable coin this stablecoin path, because it's, and maybe you can help shed some light on this, because I'm sure you've sized the market and have been tracking it. But for our listeners who might not be as familiar, how big of a market are we talking about with stablecoins? And how do you visualize, this issuance and swapping component, evolving over the next few years?
Yeah. So, and I should preface this, as I do in all these conversations with, I don't want to see fiat necessarily persist for any longer than it has to. Right. But I think meeting people where they are in terms of their existing unit of account, which if we think about it, is the stickiest habit in our lives. Like, it's not Instagram, it's not TikTok. it is your unit of account. You do, like, that's how you quantify things, you know, in your head. Like, it's just the reality. And there's a lot of Bitcoiners who, as fervent supporters and advocates of Bitcoin as they are, even they're hesitant to spend, you know, their Bitcoin. So we're still on this path. We're still on this journey. And it is our belief firmly that stablecoins offer a number of massive benefits, particularly if they're on Bitcoin, right? They're borderless, censorship resistant, a lot of the great properties about Bitcoin that we all know and love, while giving people the utility of being able to use whatever unit of account they may have to use. So that's like the sort of philosophical perspective, if you will. But from just a sheer numbers perspective, it's arguably, you know, as compelling as well. Right now, and Lynn, you kind of mentioned it as we were warming up for the show here, total stablecoin payment volumes are now fully on par with Visa. Okay, this is a technology that's been around for 5 years, you know, a handful of years. Visa's been around, you know, 50 plus. That is remarkable. And if you look at the current share that Bitcoin has of this stablecoin use case, which is effectively nothing, there's a little bit of activity. Tether started on Bitcoin via something called the Omni layer, and that continues to this day. But Bitcoin lost share to other ecosystems like Ethereum, like Tron, Solana, all these different things for a variety of reasons. And it is our belief that Taproot Assets really kind of levels that playing field in terms of the technological catalyst that, like, gives us all the speed that we need, all the throughput, all the scalability, the ability to create these things in the first place. And so if you look at the size of Bitcoin in its market cap, I think this is like a helpful way to visualize it. Bitcoin's overall market cap and overall market dominance, which is sitting today at, I don't know, don't quote me, but maybe 50, high 50s, somewhere in that range. And you compare it to Bitcoin's current share of the stablecoin use case, there is a $9.3 trillion annual payment opportunity if Bitcoin were to merely capture its quote unquote fair share of the stablecoin market based on its overall size. $9.3 trillion. Now, a lot of that, or a good portion of that, is crypto exchanges use stablecoins to settle value between themselves. You know, it's super easy to send these things across borders and, you know, very, very easy to do settlement at that level. But even if you were to strip all that away, and it's still payment volume, but I say that to suggest and imply that we Jolts probably don't play as big of a role in that pool of payment. But even if you strip all that away, you're still left with hundreds of billions of dollars right now today in organic payment volume every single month, which is truly remarkable. So now that we have this technological catalyst of an enabler that is Taproot Assets, we see, and again, it's not going to happen overnight, but we see and predict a lot of that coming back into Bitcoin.
Tether started on a layer of Bitcoin, and then as other blockchain protocols started evolving and developing, they've told the story that they're better, they're newer, they're faster, they can accommodate things other than Bitcoin. But, you know, let's say that you've been developing on another blockchain, or you're just starting to develop and you're looking at different blockchains. What makes Bitcoin superior? I know the answer, but I would love you to share your perspective, and for any of our audience, you know, to get them thinking about why Bitcoin and not Ethereum or Tron or some of the other blockchains.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin, going back to my origin story and recognizing, you know, Bitcoin's special, difficult to replicate traits, is by far the most secure foundation on which to build. It's the most immutable, you know, distributed ledger and blockchain. It's the most kind of censorship resistant, permissionless. So when you talk about a sort of credibly neutral foundation on which to build, I don't think many would argue that like that is Bitcoin, like that is the Bitcoin base layer. Then you have the Lightning Network. And I'll be the first to say that Lightning has had its growing pains over the years. I think there were really high inflated expectations early on that Lightning was going to solve every single scaling problem of Bitcoin. And one, that's not true necessarily. And two, it's taken a long time for that to develop. But Now that a lot of those core UX challenges have been solved, you're basically left with a nearly infinitely scalable payments network. And so it's important to recognize that like Lightning is more scalable from a payments throughput standpoint than Solana, than Tron, than any Ethereum rollup, right? Blockchains don't scale. We know this. Rollups and, you know, different techniques of scaling are essentially blockchains on top of blockchains. And that's one vector by which you can scale these networks. But Lightning offers an unparalleled ability to do that. So you have a better foundation on which to build. You have better kind of scalability at the payments layer. And then you also have to think about Bitcoin, the liquidity, this king pristine asset, right? This pristine capital, this pool of liquidity that is bigger than anyone else. You've seen all sorts of interesting companies like Babylon, which are trying to like take Bitcoin liquidity and use that to secure proof of stake networks. My point is you're seeing a lot of different companies realizing this massive pool of liquidity. And the beautiful thing about the Lightning Network is it is that very Bitcoin liquidity that actually routes payments. So I'm able to, for example, Lynn, send, you know, USDT or whatever it is, and that might get routed to you using actual Bitcoin liquidity. So that is yet another interesting property of the Lightning Network. And when we think about building a system that can truly, you know, scale, now, again, there's a whole other debate around UTXO scaling and getting people onto the network self-custodially. That's, you know, probably a conversation for another day, although we have a lot of thoughts there on as well. But like Lightning, we think is going to be the answer. And you see that supported by Lightspark and other great companies that are kind of building in that direction. But that's my soapbox, Lynn.
You know, it's interesting to me, because everything you mentioned, Ian, makes a lot of sense just conceptually. And, you know, I'm curious if you can speak, you know, a little more on what the motivations were or what the opportunities were for your partner in Brazil, for example. I mean, they're kind of taking the first step, you know, they're kind of being first movers as far as issuing a stablecoin on Bitcoin's Lightning Network. Yep. Due to all the properties you just explained. Yep. If I were an issuer evaluating where I'm going to, you know, which blockchain I'm going to use, the others just carry probably a lot of big security risk, right? Because as we know, Solana, Ethereum, they're a mix of either centralization or complex systems behind there that probably introduce some other risks. That's not my area of expertise. I just imagine that there's some real security risk, right? And as far as using other blockchains. Now the technology seems to be evolving on Lightning, as you're mentioning with Taproot Assets, to where this is doable.
Yep.
Why do you think, or do you, maybe the question is, do you believe that some of the other issuers will be moving towards this Taproot Assets route in the near future?
Yes, I do. I think that's going to, of course, start with, you know, smaller stablecoin issuers. And we're actually talking with a range of different partners in addition to you, Lynn, that have, you know, US dollar-backed stablecoins, euro-backed stablecoins, different design trade-offs, some that are centrally issued, others that are, you know, decentrally issued. So I'm really excited to see the kind of bevy of different options that sort of end consumers will have there. And then the big boys, whether it's Tether or Circle, I think it's a question of when, not if. We're told that, you know, Lightning Labs is obviously having those conversations, but they're gonna move at their pace. They're gonna do their due diligence. They're going to see some of these early projects like DPIX and use that to, you know, evaluate that decision. But there's a strong kind of legacy between Tether and Bitcoin. And interestingly, to your initial point about like why, what was the motivation for Yulin, DPIX was and is originally issued on the liquid sidechain to Bitcoin, which is interesting, right? And so the reason they want to, you know, have the Taproot Assets alternative and why they think that's a superior method. And I love the liquid sidechain. There's a lot of really interesting things you can do on liquid. It has great privacy guarantees for end users. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what was happening was a lot of these users of DPIX were essentially having to do all these steps. They were having to go from, okay, I have picks. Okay, I can get DPICs. Okay, now I can take my DPICs and I can get LBTC, which is the liquid pegged version of Bitcoin. So I can peg Bitcoin into the liquid sidechain. I receive LBTC one-to-one for that. Okay, now I have LBTC. Now I got to go and take LBTC and swap it for, you know, actual Bitcoin or, you know, Bitcoin on Lightning, whatever the case is. So what ended up happening was you have like multiple different swap providers and therefore multiple fees that these users were paying just to kind of get from A to B, whatever that sort of path was that they were trying to do. So with our technology built on Taproot assets, that compresses that to like one, right? There's one provider, one swaps needed, one set of fees. So it's cheaper for users. It's faster, it's easier. So that was the motivation for Yulin. We're also talking with a number of wallets who support stablecoins in their wallets that are, you know, stablecoins on Polygon or Ethereum, some of these other ecosystems, solely for the fact that that's what was possible when, you know, they were building the wallet. And so with Taproot assets, that changes. And so there's a number of wallets there that are like really eager to, you know, to get this in there. And the final kind of market signal I would throw out that's quite interesting is, you know, we're talking in early partnership conversations with a number of these stablecoin as a service platforms. And, you know, without saying who we're talking to and who we're not talking to, I mentioned that example of one such company, Bridge, earlier, right, that was acquired by Stripe for $1.1 billion. It turns out they already have some customer leads that have asked about the ability to create stablecoins on Bitcoin. And that's not something that their existing technology can support because it's very hard to do so. So that's where the Jolts technology also comes in. So definitely encouraging signs so far. Although obviously, you know, this is also going to kind of unfold as we go forward in the coming months.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of focus a little bit more on who are your clients. So you mentioned wallets and you mentioned, you know, these different use cases, but how about broader financial systems or broader players in the market? I'd love for you to dive a little bit deeper into, you have the SDK, what other tools do you have? How would a client that says, hey, this sounds really interesting, I'd like to explore it, What are your product suite offerings and who would they be appropriate for?
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I think the initial targets so far are sort of two broad groups. One is asset issuers, so they can use our little issuer dashboard, which is hooked up to our SDK to do all the things I was mentioning earlier that that Yulin's doing, you know, mint the asset, manage the supply, all that good stuff. And then the second broad group is the wallets, different payment apps, as well as these stablecoin as a service platforms, all of whom would like the ability to support stablecoins on Bitcoin and specifically Lightning, you know, for their end users. But widening that that sort of umbrella, as you said, Lynn, fintechs, I mean, there's all sorts of fintechs, and we've seen Lightspark make some really strong inroads with their Lightning offering into Latin America in particular, some of these big fintechs, Nubank. So there have been some really kind of exciting, you know, developments there. And so any kind of fintech that wants to enable cross-border money movement in the, you know, cheapest, most effective, most secure way possible, this is a great sort of fit for them. And, you know, we also have our standalone Jolts wallet, which is partly a demonstration of what can be built with the SDK. But it also allows us to sort of like plug that in to really anywhere you can run a bit of, you know, JavaScript. So imagine like going on to any, you know, imagine going on to Amazon and having a little connect wallet button, you know, in Amazon, and that brings up, spins you up a Jolts wallet, and enables you to, you know, basically plug a wallet into that type of environment. So, you know, we have technology that allows us to embed within native apps, technology that allows us to embed within just kind of regular web pages and platforms like that. And so really a full kind of wallet as a service kind of suite there. And then depending on the partner, you know, we also have partnership with Voltage that a lot of folks listening are probably aware of. They do, you know, professional enterprise grade Lightning node infrastructure. And so we're doing some really exciting stuff with them to kind of extend that those capabilities into Taproot assets as well.
And, you know, getting a little more into the company itself, Ian, also, you know, maybe now's a good time to cover monetization. I mean, so if I'm interested in using Jolt's services, is it me as a business that's paying for this? I mean, how do I actually integrate and account for the cost of integrating, or is that passed on to end users?
Yeah, great question. So basically, our tech is completely free for developers to use. We're doing a big overhaul of our website to kind of have an easier way for developers to get access to all our documentation and tools that they need. But it's completely free for developers to use. We obviously want to like lower that barrier as much as possible. We estimate that that saves developers 3,000 plus hours, you know, versus building all this stuff in house. That's probably $500,000, you know, tech build. If you're being conservative, so it saves them a lot of time and money to, you know, use our tools versus trying to go it themselves. So in many ways, this is a classic kind of build versus buy decision for them. But they get all that for free. And then the way we make money is on the back end when end users do different things. So let's say that I'm a DPIX user and I want to swap that DPIX into sats, kind of carrying on our example we were saying earlier. There is a fee for that, a small fee that Jolt would get when that user, you know, performs that action. So that's kind of the model there. And you can think about different actions, whether it's swapping one asset for another, you know, sending a payment, right? And these are tiny, tiny fees that with scale, you know, obviously adds up in a big way. And we can also, we've also done in even just this year, we've done some more kind of custom, you know, custom kind of implementations where maybe a client has a request for a particular feature that we know would be pretty universally helpful for others. You know, we can kind of monetize that specific request and build that, but obviously that's a little bit less scalable. But we have done some sort of consulting engagements like that as well.
And you're new, but you've been generating some pretty healthy revenues so far, Ian. Can you talk a little bit about the traction of the company and what you've seen, especially since you've pivoted into this new model?
Yeah, a lot of the revenue that we've booked in 2024 sort of falls in that latter bucket of what I was just saying of these kind of like upfront implementation fees. You know, I mentioned Kilo Club, which is a good example of a client that doesn't necessarily have all the kind of technical know-how that would be able to kind of work with our tooling. And so in that situation, we're able to bring a more white-gloved kind of approach and sort of, you know, do that on their behalf. So that has really been the sort of story of our revenue in 2024. And we've just booked we've already hit our kind of highest revenue quarter in Q4. I don't imagine a whole lot will change in these final two weeks, but you never know. But that's a great milestone for us to end on and kind of close the year out. The really big transition that we're making is, you know, a lot of those more consultative kind of implementation driven revenues are not as scalable, obviously. And so the big transition we're making from a business model standpoint with the launch of these of the SDK and the accompanying swap tools and all that sort of stuff is we're transitioning to this more repeat recurring revenue model where as we expand our set of partners, the end users of those partners continues to expand and we can basically just, you know, sit there as the tech provider and earn a much more recurring high margin, you know, revenue stream. So that's the transition as we head into 2025. And, you know, with the pipeline we have, we're really excited about what we've got ahead of us.
And your pipeline, can you talk a little bit about the geographies that you're servicing? I mean, I guess it's global, but you started in the U.S. and now you're in Brazil. And so what are there particular either geographical regions or demographic regions that you're focused on?
Yeah, I think it is pretty global. We're talking with partners in Southeast Asia and Europe and Latin America. I do think we will, you know, lean a bit into the Brazilian market just because of how great of a partner we have there, who, you know, knows the market so well, who has this active existing base of users that gives us, you know, just a lot of upside just in that sort of market. However, it is global. And so, you know, there's folks listening may be familiar with a number of the regional, you know, there's a lot of these like regionally focused or market focused Lightning wallets. Taproot Assets is a very logical complement to kind of what they already have with Lightning. And so there's a number of those types of segments. And yeah, they are global. So no particular geographic focus. It's more about the kind of segment of the business that's how we're really targeting and focusing.
Well, it sounds like you're certainly setting yourselves up for a strong year of traction ahead of you. And so, I mean, it's an exciting moment. We were kind of speaking to all of this a little bit before the recording, right? I mean, it does feel like you guys are sitting in a very timely and opportune moment with the growth of not just Bitcoin, but, you know, these stable coins, and global adoption is just set to, I think, just take off here. So one, looking forward to it. Excited for you guys. You know, maybe as a company, Ian, what are some of your, you know, early learnings for, you know, you're a relatively young company, but for other young companies, particularly in the Bitcoin space, you know, what have been some of those lessons learned as far as, you know, anything from team building to fundraising, you know, anything you can speak to there?
Yeah. I mean, Lynn, you kind of pulled one of those nuggets out earlier of like just being willing to, you know, to change and pivot in response to data. You kind of have to be constantly iterating, constantly testing and learning. I think that's true for any startup, but it's certainly true in the Bitcoin space because, you know, Bitcoin is this really multifaceted thing. Like it can be so many things to so many people. Building some of the tech we're building, we're like, you know, where do we focus? Like, how do we decide how to focus when this thing could be, you know, so useful for so many different use cases? And that's particularly true when we've positioned ourselves now a little more upstream around the infrastructure side, as opposed to being kind of use case specific. We're more use case agnostic, albeit with a focus on the stablecoin side of things. So I would say, you know, be relentless in your focus early on, but be willing to adapt and change because you will pivot. Like if you don't pivot, you're either incredibly lucky and like awesome job. Well, you're either incredibly talented and smarter than me, which like great job. You're lucky. Or you think you're still on the right path when in fact you should be on a different path. So always have that kind of healthy paranoia of like, am I on the right path? And how do I know that that's true? In a related way, and I don't want this to be doom or gloom or discouraging in any way, but you know, I do think it is often useful to, in the same spirit as staying humble and stacking sats, you should stay humble and acknowledge you're probably farther away from product market fit than you think. And we've experienced that a lot in, you know, in our journey. You know, it's this interesting world of like your earliest users where you think, oh man, there's a ton of signal here. Those are not necessarily like your next users or your next users. And so figuring out a product that meets the needs, not just of those like earliest users, which is obviously super important. Like you have to fixate and obsess over those early customers, but also being able to simultaneously kind of peek around the corner and be like, well, how many of these early customers are really out there? And how different are these early adopters versus, you know, the rest of folks? Again, a principle probably holds true for any startup, but I think is particularly salient in the Bitcoin space, given that we are still so early, you know, other than like buying and selling Bitcoin, Bitcoin mining, and maybe some stuff around like Bitcoin custody, everything else I would argue is quite fresh, is quite new, is quite cutting edge. And so, you know, that's kind of one takeaway. I think the last one, and again, not trying to be doom or gloom, but like your fundraising journey, I think you should anticipate that it's going to be difficult. As a founder, you know, you love your baby. You think it's the prettiest baby, And it's tough, right? Like you're going out there trying to fundraise, and part ways with, you know, someone's money when guess what? They could put that into Bitcoin. Are you going to beat the return of Bitcoin? You better have a compelling case as to why that is. And so in a world where Bitcoin exists, your bar as a founder, and especially in the Bitcoin space where the investor on the other side obviously is doing that same calculus, like that bar goes up and that can be challenging at times. But, ultimately I think, you know, it pushes you to focus on revenue earlier. You know, strategically I posted a little funny, you know, tweet earlier, you know, Jolts has a larger Bitcoin treasury than Microsoft, you know, that's it. That's the post. Which is true. You know, see if you can like use, you know, Bitcoin strategically as a treasury asset. Obviously that can cut both ways, but, anticipate that the bar for fundraising is going to be high. And so I think using a wide range of options, you know, there's new platforms now like Thunderfunder, which, you know, obviously we're doing our little offer there. There's, you know, there's angels, there's, you know, kind of bigger VCs. And I think there's more capital coming in slowly to the Bitcoin space. But I'm telling you, there's still quite a lot of, you know, investors in the broader crypto sphere who are going to look for a token as part of that deal. And so it's still difficult, I think, relatively speaking, for, you know, Bitcoin builders and Bitcoin companies. But the good news is that that's improving over time.
No, I agree. I mean, that I think is the most unique differentiator between a startup in traditional tech and Bitcoin is that traditional tech startups don't have that same comparable where anyone who's been in Bitcoin for a while, which is the natural investor, would say, will this outperform Bitcoin? Or they may just want to really support the ecosystem building yes. out, and they understand the potential of the entire financial market surrounding Bitcoin and what that future could be even larger than what Bitcoin's appreciation will be over time. But it's got to be early. Yeah, it's like building the internet when the internet was first getting started. So
exactly.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit, Ian, about what your fundraising has been like to date and where you are, and understanding, you know, the typical we're not fundraising here and you're not soliciting or anything like that, the disclaimers. But talk to us a little bit about your fundraising journey.
Yeah. So, we're currently doing our seed round. We're doing that on a safe. We have some participation from awesome investors like UTXO Management. If folks are not familiar, they're the venture arm attached to BTC Inc. That owns Bitcoin Magazine, that puts on, you know, Bitcoin 2024, the conference that you know, we won the pitch competition at. We have some great angels on board, and we're talking with a number of you know, the big Bitcoin VCs. So that's all very exciting. We've also, coming out of that pitch day win, so we won the layer two track at Bitcoin 2024, where we met up. And as part of that, Mike Harmuz was one of the judges over at Lightning Ventures. And they've recently spun up this Thunderfunder platform, which is really cool. It basically democratizes access to investing in Bitcoin startups. So it's a Reg CF, you know, crowdfund platform, and they're, you know, fully SEC registered, all the compliance stuff, right? Like, you know, good on them for kind of going about it that way. It was a lot of work and effort. But we've also, we're as part of that pitch day win, we basically got to be guinea pigs, for that platform. It's been a great, journey so far. We're a little over 50% of our goal, on that campaign. You know, if folks are interested in seeing more information on that, they can go to thunderfunder.com. But yeah, so we're getting there. And I think our goal and target at this point is to, hopefully close around, you know, maybe first half or so of Q1 as we get into this next year.
Well, I mean, you know, definitely looking forward to all the developments. We might have to get you back on in a few months, Ian, because I mean, it's sometimes you kind of lose grasp of how quickly development flies in the Bitcoin sector, right? I mean, it was only just a short few months ago that we met with you, and you're now about to launch the first stablecoin on Bitcoin's Lightning Network in Brazil, and you're, you know, hopefully within a few weeks closing that round. That all being said, I guess, you know, before we wrap up the episode, any other, you know, comments or anything you'd like to leave people with, or where to get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, where to get in touch. You can follow us on X. We are at @jolts_BTC. You can also find us on our website, joltsrewards.com, which is still a little bit legacy from the rewards past. That'll switch over to jolts.money here very soon, but you know, you'll be redirected accordingly. And yeah, those are probably the big channels. I do, as a side hobby, a YouTube channel. You can just search my name, Ian Major, or All Things Bitcoin, like a way less cool BTC Sessions. But there's a whole lot of tutorials and educational content there if folks want to check that out. But yeah, those are probably the best ways to get in touch with us. And yeah, we would love to hear from you if you have ideas or thoughts around kind of what we're building. You know, I don't think, you know, not right this second, but hopefully once we get the fundraising milestones complete, you know, I'm sure we will be looking to expand the team. And so, you know, if you're a developer or are curious in testing out some of the technology, definitely reach out. But you know, we hope that, we can play our small role in this great kind of journey in, advancing Bitcoin across this kind of store of value to medium exchange to unit of account. And we really do think, you know, a key requirement for that is this kind of, you know, stablecoin piece that meets people where they are and enables us to, you know, bring them along for this journey towards more self-sovereignty. But it was a pleasure coming on once again. Always happy to come back on. So, I will accept any offer to return.
Well, we just thank you so much, and we're just very excited. When Ezra and I read the news about the Brazil partnership and the first stablecoin to be issued, I mean, I hope people appreciate the potential of this and how widely stablecoins are being used globally, and that you are one of the first people that's actually implementing Taproot Assets, which is a newer part of the Bitcoin protocol. So you're really breaking new ground, and you've got an exciting journey ahead. So we're just happy to be along for the ride with you and help share your story. So thank you again, Ian.
100%. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not to be considered investment advice or recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody, Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.